Les colloques du Collège de France.
Great. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me to this great conference with great people, fantastic location. As I was walking around, I was just thinking how this might be one of the largest concentrations of like intellectual power historically. These couple of blocks in the 5th arrondissement, like Collège de France, Sorbonne, École Polytechnique, École Normale, all it's pretty amazing. But the most important is the people here, and that's why I'm excited to present this project. And if we're thinking about how we've been seesawing this morning between the kind of more optimistic and the more pessimistic view about AI, I would say that we're kind of on the more hopeful side of the ledger, at least as a starting point. So this is a joint project and very much ongoing work, as you see, is a recent experiment, and we're really working literally kind of as we speak in terms of extending this and analyzing this. Okay, so the starting point here is actually the negative view on AI, and if we're coming from the recent developments, you know, from social media, etc. So this idea that online misinformation, in particular, is a big problem, right? A big societal problem. Think about fake news, but kind of more broadly, and that this was conducive and has been leading to reduced trust in news content, reduced trust in institutions, more polarization, and you know, with the negative implications for democracy, and even kind of from a business perspective, kind of what it means for the media industry, the news media industry, could have potentially negative effects as trust kind of collapses in this context of misinformation. So this has been a growing concern, and if we look at recent evidence on whether people are concerned with these things, all over the place, and the numbers are very high and increasing in terms of people viewing this as a problem, right? As a problem for trust. Now, AI enters the picture, and generative AI in particular, and makes it even more of a problem, as it represents this big shock towards the cost of producing content that is virtually indistinguishable from real content, for authentic content. So the idea of deep fakes. And there's already accumulating evidence that this can actually increase this process of distrust in the media. When people get exposed to AI content, their trust in the news media goes down. And this could then eventually translate into even more severe challenges to the democratic process, right? And people have been talking about this as deep fakes, as a threat to democracy. So we've seen this in terms of kind of political terms. And, you know, in 2024 in particular, and we were kind of very much, it was the election year, right? Many important elections around the world. And deep fakes were seen as a threat. There's a question as to what extent they materialized. But there's this big concern all around us, right? But our starting point, and this is kind of what got me thinking about this, is that if you think about the economic incentives here, you say, well, something that becomes scarce also becomes more valuable, right? So in a world in which there is lower trust in news media content, the value of developing a reputation of being able to help consumers distinguish between fake and real content might become more valuable, right? So this both could lead to you know, a different business proposition here, where news organizations and outlets could actually, some of them could benefit from a situation where there is declining trust in general, and this could actually impose at least a certain floor in terms of having like the complete collapse of trust that I think a lot of people have been predicting in terms of an effect of misinformation, but particularly AI-powered misinformation, right? With you know, now with the super high quality videos and audios and so on. So the broader point here is that it can be more complicated than just this a simple trajectory with AI powering misinformation, which is leading to a collapse in trust, okay? So in particular, we already see some organizations trying to lean into this, right? So if you look at the New York Times, they have this whole kind of visual investigations team where they basically say, we're gonna tell you whether this content is authentic or not. That obviously requires resources, and they say, you know, subscribe here, and you know, you're gonna get some value out of this, right? So what do? We're gonna ask what happens when people get confronted with the difficulty of distinguishing AI-generated and real content, and we're going to see whether this actually might increase their willingness to engage with and to pay for trusted news sources, right? So that is, those are the questions that we're investigating. And what we're going to do is we're going to conduct a field experiment with a major German newspaper. And the treatment is a quiz that people have to take and that asks them to tell apart AI generated from real pictures. And then we have a survey. And what's interesting about this project is that we have both kind of the survey dimension where we ask them about trust, we ask them about concern with misinformation and willingness to pay, but we also have data on their actual behavior after the experiment, both in terms of their engagement with the online content and their subscription decisions as well. Right, so we have both stated preferences and kind of revealed preference outcomes that we get after the intervention. So our partner in the intervention is Süddeutsche Zeitung, which is, I call it kind of like the Bavarian New York Times for American audiences. So it is the largest sort of non-tabloid newspaper in Germany. And it's a very respected news organization, kind of more on the center left. And, you know, they broke the Panama Papers story, for instance. So they're kind of a very sort of serious news organization. And they have an online team that regularly runs experiments with subscribers and you know users of their content. And they're kind of thinking about how they position themselves in this world of you know misinformation, et cetera. So this is kind of one campaign that they have, which says, the truth cannot be generated, only research. So this idea that like we can provide you with tools to figure out what the truth is, right? So in that context, we partnered with them to conduct this experiment where we have what we call this AI awareness quiz. And the goal here is to make people realize that it's very hard to distinguish AI generated from real visual content. So we're going to show them three pairs of pictures. In each pair, one of them is AI generated. And then in the control treatment, the control quiz, we have basically current affairs knowledge. We show them the same real picture that we showed in the AI quiz, plus the real picture that was fed into the AI to generate the fake pictures. And they need to tell us, you know, kind of some, you know, in this case, where the pictures are from. So kind of testing current affairs knowledge, so to speak. Okay. And the idea here is then, you know, the treatment group would have been exposed to this difficulty of distinguishing between the images. And then we're going to track their you know, state of preferences and behavior. So this is the treatment, okay? So we're going to ask which images are AI generated. It could be left, right, both, or none. In this case, if it were a longer presentation, I would have you guys do the quiz. But in this case, I'm telling you that the left image is AI generated, okay? So that's the first. It's called the flood picture. Then we have the politician's picture. So this is Trump and Obama. That's a real picture. They're being chummy. That's in the Jimmy Carter funeral. And then the other one is a fake picture where we had Alice Feidel, the leader of the AfD, the far-right party, being chummy with Olaf Scholz, the former chancellor. This is a fake picture, right? And finally, we have this protests. So the image on the left is AI-generated. The image on the right is from a pro-EU protest in Georgia, okay? So this is the treatment. You have to say which one is real. And these are this is the control treatment, okay? So kind of like the images that we use to generate the AI pictures and then they're asked, where are these pictures from, okay? So we have this sort of an invitation to do this quiz sent to you know subscribers and non-subscribers. The one thing that I would highlight here is first we have a bigger sample of subscribers because they are reached by email. They're on the mailing list, so it's like a lot more effective than a pop-up ad that is for the non-subscribers. The other thing is, and this is what is important about like the setting where we're doing this, is that we know that they trust that particular source, right? Because the idea here is you're going to be more incentivized to engage with a source that you already trust, right? So we need a setting where we know that they trust the specific organization, and that is the case, right? So we ask them about the levels of trust. So in the control group, they have, you know, very high levels of trust. And for a subset of the sample, we actually match, so they need to authorize us to do this, we match the survey data with their behavior online, both before and after the experiment. So that tracked sample is what is going to give us these revealed preference outcomes that I'm going to talk about. So first, the stated outcomes are you concerned with this information? How trustworthy do you find these different media platforms and your willingness to pay for the SZ subscription? And then we also track, for the tracked sample, engagement, so their number of daily visits to digital content, and then whether they remain subscribers, right? So basically the likelihood of unsubscribers. So these are all subscribers, the tracked sample, okay? So balance checks are fine. First thing is, how did people do in the quiz? Pretty poorly in terms of the AI quiz, right? So the control quiz was easy, and that was kind of by design, right? So we're kind of bundling here the difficulty of the task with the AI content because we wanted to make it really sharp, the difficulty aspect of distinguishing between these images. We want to make the treatment strong enough. And people do poorly, a little bit better than just, you know, like the monkey randomly picking at the options, a little bit better, but not that much, okay? And people understood this. And, you know, the people who did poorly in the test are more likely to report that the test was difficult, and the people in the treatment group are more likely to say that the test was difficult than the people in the control group, okay? Now, survey outcomes. So the first thing, if you just look at the raw data comparing treatment survey responses to control survey responses, we see this impact on the concern with misinformation, right? So the people who get treated are significantly likelier to report that they are concerned with misinformation, with online misinformation, and that's like about a third of a standard deviation. And there is a decline in trust in all the new news platforms that we ask, which is basically what has been found in the literature, right? So you expose people to AI, and the AI misinformation, people become less trustworthy in news. So that goes both for the high trust media like SZ or public TV in Germany, and the online platforms which are low trust. And we find no change in their willingness to pay, right, on average. So this is kind of reproducing what we've known from the literature, right? But when we go to the reveal preference outcomes, we see that the treated individuals increase their engagement with the platform, okay? So they actually, this is again the raw data, they increase their number of visits relative to the control group after the treatment, okay? And then we do like a differences in differences analysis here with kind of different time horizons here, and we see that there is this a positive effect where, you know, within 3 days you see kind of this big a jump in terms of engagement. I mean, it's like about a 3% increase. And it's still detectable over time up to, you know, 14 days, even though obviously it declines in size, but there is this increase in engagement with the newspaper. And when we look at subscription status, we see again like this difference opening up between the control group in blue and the treatment group, where dropped subscriptions are significantly lower in the treatment group. Now, these are small numbers, okay, because few individuals are coming up for renewal at, you know, the specific window of time that we have. But still, we can detect like a positive effect in sort of your likelihood of remaining a subscriber, which is about like, so the attrition rate is about one third lower for the treatment group, okay? Now, we also look at some heterogeneity dimensions in our data, which we had, some of them we had pre-registered. So the first that we had pre-registered is about the performance on the quiz. In particular, you know, whether they thought that the quiz was difficult. Kind of following the literature that's focused on self-assessed quiz performance, but we also have actual quiz performance that we'll look at as well, and kind of similar results, but actually self-assessed performance seems to be kind of the main source of action here. And because the tests were very difficult, we adjust, very different in terms of difficulty, we adjust for the relative performance. So we compare people who thought the quiz was hard relative to the other people in the same group. So above and below group median, basically. So then we have also their levels of prior usage of the website, the prior visits, again, for the tracked sample that we can actually connect to the survey data. And we look at above and below average users of SZ. We call them heavy and light readers. And also, we have data on which kinds of content they were looking at before the intervention. So we focus in particular on the people who had prior affinity for political topics, right? So the idea, you know, maybe because it's kind of a current affairs test, so these were particularly interested in that dimension of heterogeneity. So first, kind of showing the heterogeneity in the survey outcomes, and I will direct your attention here in particular to the heterogeneity according to like the quiz performance. So the people who found the quiz hard did not reduce trust in SZ. So on average, there was a negative effect, but not for these people, okay? And they did increase their reported willingness to pay for SZ as well, right? So those people who were actually perhaps kind of particularly confronted with that challenge responded in this a very different way. Now, obviously, this is not exogenous, right? And these people are, you know, potentially very different from people who found the quiz less hard or were less willing to say that the quiz is hard, and also across the groups, right? Given that the control and treatment quizzes were different. So we're not pushing any causal interpretation here, but at a descriptive level, this is what we see. And we also see that the effects and misinformation in particular are particularly strong for the people with low politics affinity. So it's the lower politics affinity people who kind of respond with a greater concern with misinformation from the treatment here. And these things are actually, they map onto the revealed preference outcomes as well, right? So again, it is the people who found the quiz hard who are more likely to increase their number of visits, right? The people who are of low politics affinity who are more likely to increase their engagement as well. And also, although that was not the case for the stated preferences, it's the heavy readers that respond more. I think it makes sense, right? The people who use it more are more likely to respond with more usage. I mean, could have been different, but it makes sense. But we see that this the heterogeneity, I think, points at the margins on which the particular mechanism that we're talking about here, right? This response in terms of trust might be operating, right? So people who are particularly likely to be confronted with that difficulty of the task, right, and who are more attached to the source, but at the same time, perhaps were kind of less engaged with politics to begin with. They kind of their awareness is raised, so this might be where the margin of action, where there is a stronger margin of action. So so this is the message here. Okay. So in sum, we find that increased AI awareness. Experimentally induced increased concern with misinformation and lower overall trust in news, so kind of reproducing existing results, including the trusted outlet as well, right? So it's not as if, you know, all of a sudden people say, well, you know, I'm more aware of AI misinformation, now I trust, you know, my preferred source more, but yet they increase their actual engagement, right, with that news source, because they say, well, you know, I still trust them a lot, right? And I'm going to respond with greater engagement. And this was driven particularly by those who struggled with the quiz, who also maintained trust, by the way, and showed greater willingness to pay, you know, reported willingness to pay, and also by heavy users relatively less interested in politics as well. So to summarize, I think the impact of AI on the news environment can be more nuanced than I think, you know, maybe the conventional wisdom is that, well, yes, there is a negative, a deleterious effect on trust, but there are some forces that might, you know, sort of be a counterpoint to a complete collapse in trust, right? So there's a potential business opportunity here as well. And, you know, in some, we're thinking of additional work that is maybe trying to exploit a little bit how, like, what we can do to kind of try to activate that trust margin or increase it, but let me stop here and say thank you and, you know, ready for questions.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.